was like, I'm going to make six figures working for myself.
You didn't know if it would make it. Sounds like you almost quit. And then you ended the year tracking six figures in revenue. What was that low point?
It was really rough. It basically just got to the point where I was having like a cash flow issue.
What brought you back from the brink?
So what I did was I hired a salesperson. From like Q2 to Q3, she like tripled the revenue.
The first year you go from zero to 10,000 subscribers. Today you're at 23,000.
Yeah, we're at over 23,000 now. I've figured it out. What levers need to be pulled at what times for growth and for like revenue.
How? What's the strategy there?
Okay, yeah, so...
Welcome back to the Creative Spotlight Podcast. My name is Francis Zier, and today we are speaking with Marissa Lavelle, founder of From Boise, a local newsletter in Boise, Idaho. She started it in 2021, quit her job to do it full-time in 2024, and last year, 2025, for the very first time, she cracked six figures in revenue with a little over 23,000 subscribers. Think you'll like it. Enjoy. So in December, just about a month ago as we record, in a LinkedIn post, you wrote... Earlier this year, I didn't know if From Boise would make it. I am so proud to still be in business and to have accomplished my big goal of crossing $100,000 in revenue. A lot can change in 6 months. Thrilled to be ending the year with money in the bank, ideas flowing, people I love working with, stories I'm excited to share, and a business that is fun and fulfilling. You didn't know if it would make it. Sounds like you almost quit, and then you ended the year cracking six figures in revenue. What was that low point?
Yeah. Oh my gosh, there was multiple low points.
Oh,
but
spill.
Yeah. Okay. So in October of 2024, I had a baby. And you know, having a baby just like changes your whole everything. And at that point I was doing like most of the content, most of my like Tuesday stories. I had somebody else writing the Thursday stories. I had somebody else doing social media, and I was doing all the sponsorships. So I was like doing a lot of writing and a lot of editor jobs and sponsorships, like all of the sales, which is has always been very hard for me to balance this whole time, like almost 5 years. It's always just been very hard to like hold both of those things and do a really good job at them. I'm scrambling on one or the other. And it basically just got to the point where I was having like a cash flow issue and I did not have time. Because I had this baby, like I couldn't just like go out there and I couldn't do it all.
It's
basically, yeah, it was just, I couldn't do it all. And the honestly though, the becoming a mom has been like the best thing for my business. I mean that. Like in the past, I would have always just, I could have just gone and gotten another job, right? Like I could have picked up some freelance work or worked at a coffee shop or like I always had these backup plans and all of a sudden I was like, this has to work. This is my option. Like
I need to stay home. I need to be able to work from home with my baby. And
yeah. Or I want
this
to.
This is just like, a must. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. I could have gone and gotten a, I actually did apply for a couple other jobs then. And then I was like, I don't want to do that. Like, what am I, why are you doing this to yourself? But yeah. And so I, it like got to the point where I did not pay myself for multiple months. My husband and I were like legit scraping by. And then you have this baby that like needs diapers and stuff. Yeah, so it was really rough. Like doing the work and not getting paid for it is not fun.
Well, what brought you back from the brink? What was the, did you sign some big sponsorship or you just suddenly had this month where all the sponsorships agreed and it started to roll in? What happened?
Yeah. So what I did was I let go of pretty much the whole team and hired a salesperson instead. So I took on like all the content. I took on the social media. And which I'm not very good at social media. So, and hired a salesperson. And she was somebody that I had actually met through my newsletter. She's had just graduated from college and she's like, she has a marketing background. And she's like a creator herself, mostly on social media, but she knows, like understands what I'm doing. And she, I've just been talking to her and she's like, I don't think I want to do marketing. I think I want to do sales. I was like, really?
You don't
you like
say.
To help? Yeah, like, I have an idea for you. And she just like crushed it. Like, I mean, the from like Q2 to Q3, she like tripled the revenue.
Wow.
Yeah, it was. And I was very honest with her. Like, things are not in a good spot right now. I have enough money to pay you. Like, I will promise you will be paid. But I like it, basically, if this doesn't turn around by the end of the year, like I got to figure something out, you know. And she just, I mean, she loves doing it. She's really good at it. But she has also told me that I had a really good foundation. I mean, it's not like I wasn't doing sponsorships before. So she kind of like took the systems that I was already working in, improved them, created like, you know, a really beautiful media kit, and just got after it. And so, yeah, we did. We landed like a year-long sponsorship with Idaho Lottery.
Oh, wow.
Which has been great.
They have money.
And so that, yeah, they do. They have like a lot more. Like, it was actually very interesting learning about the lottery. But yeah, so, and then just a couple other, just like bigger, you know, like multiple month partnerships. And she just has like, that is what she's focused on. And now she does a couple other things in the business. It's just me and her now, actually.
Okay.
So, but yeah, that's what happened is I hired a salesperson and I hired the right person.
Hey there, if you're watching or listening to this episode, then it means that you may be interested in our other episodes in which we've spoken to local newsletter creators. We've actually spoken to 8 creators that have local newsletter products, and they're all very different from each other. So I've put them all into one playlist so that they're all together and easy to find. It's in the description of this video, and you can find it on our YouTube channel in the playlist section. There's lots to learn from every single one, so I hope you find them useful. Let's get back to the episode with Marissa.
I took this down from your site. How you listed out is Tuesday is an original story about local people, places, history, and happenings, which you say you often work with freelance writers. Sometimes it's you. Thursday is a huge list of things to do in the Boise area this weekend. Monthly, you send a plan ahead guide for the upcoming month, and there are exclusive subscriber only deals that also support local businesses. This sounds like a fairly typical local newsletter format compared to some of the other people I've spoken with, Michael Kaufman, Landon Huslig, Ryan Sneddon, Jeff Sharp, a few of these guys. We'll get into that later. That's it, right? Like, this is the description of this media product. Yeah. Is there anything I'm really missing there?
Nope. It's, it's the twice a week newsletter. I'm not really interested in sending more than that. And the plan ahead thing is kind of new, and there's like a strategy it's pretty much a growth strategy. Some feedback that I've always gotten from my readers is that they wish that the Thursday newsletter came out earlier so that they could plan more ahead. Which I understand, but I'm also like, all of this is out there. Like, you could go find it, you know.
Oh, that's
you
what
really
they
wanted to plan
that's,
ahead.
Well, I guess they don't pay you for, but that's what they proverbially, that's what they pay you for with their email address and attention.
Right. And so I don't really want to move the days. Like, I guess it's just because it's like, it's kind of like how my whole workflow is now, is like Tuesday, Thursday. So I didn't really want to flip flop those. It probably would be fine if I did, but like, I just don't want to. So the plan ahead is I basically take all the big events coming up. They actually don't even have to be big. Some of them are just like, I don't know, quirky little things that I'm like, this is happening and it's cute and fun. So here's the thing. And I just do an extra newsletter. Sometimes it will replace the Tuesday newsletter. Sometimes I send it on like Monday or Wednesday, but it's just a huge list of things to do like for the next month. In January, I did for 2026.
Okay.
And then I make a post, like we make a very simple reel on Instagram. I have a ManyChat automation set up. And then I boost it, and I boost it for like 5 days.
ManyChat, for anybody listening who isn't familiar, is the app where you can, you know, if you see somebody say on an Instagram post, comment this word and I'll send you this thing. ManyChat is the automation that allows you to do that without manually doing the work.
Yeah. And that has become like one of like a very important funnel for me for new subscribers.
Really quick on the Tuesday issues, how much do you pay external writers to write those?
I pay them $350.
That's
just
a nice
like
price.
Flat. Yeah. And I'm expecting them to like provide photos, either like source them from the person or work with somebody to like get the photos. They do a lot of research, especially like our history stories are like very well researched. It usually involves an interview. And then I'm expecting like around 1500 words.
So, yeah. Okay, I think March 30th, 2021 is the first issue. Am I right? How different is the product today? Like those first 3 weeks, let's say that first month, were you sending the Tuesday and Thursday? And Tuesday was a story. Thursday was events aggregation.
Yep.
How different? So it hasn't
exactly
really changed.
The same. I've literally never missed a day. I just sent my 500th newsletter.
Never? How have you never missed a day?
I've never missed a day. I've stayed up literally all night sometimes. I've scrambled the whole day before. Literally, we were on our way to the hospital to have a baby. And I was like, I know this sounds insane, but I need to schedule my newsletter. It was a Sunday. And I was like, the newsletter has to go out on Tuesday. And my husband was like, I'm pretty sure they would understand. And I was like, no, it is ready to go. All I have to do is schedule it. Just like, let me do it. I've never missed a day. but yeah, it's exactly the same. I would say the difference is like, I was a little bit spicier back then. I don't know, when you have a smaller audience, like you can just do a lot of experimenting. And I think that's like the best time to experiment and ask for feedback. Cause it's like this very small group of people who are like very invested in what you're doing. Right. Like they're, you know, in Boise also. So 2021, like it was still pandemic-y, you know, right? Like there was a lot of people, there was a lot of people that moved to Boise, the Boise area. In 2020, 2021.
A lot of California expats, right?
And like, yes, California, also Texas, and just like all over. But yes, there was like, a, I mean, in the last 25 years, the population has doubled here. So like it is just growing very, very fast. There's some cities that like literally in the last year, their population has grown by like 5, 10%.
Wow.
So it's just... I mean, I get it. It's a great place to be, but it grew really fast. So there was kind of like the right timing of all of that too. But there was all these people moving here that like didn't know what was going on. You know, like they didn't, they wanted to know how to like live here. So there was that bucket of people. And then we were just like, you know, there was all these businesses that opened or closed and it was like, you know, can you like go, what is open downtown anymore? Like we haven't been going to restaurants or, so that was my first story was what's going on. It was called What's Going On in Boise These Days. And I like just kind of, I don't know, like just talked about like, here's some new restaurants that open downtown. This new park got built. Ridge River's just put in this new trail. Like this, you know, I just kind of talked about like stuff that had changed.
So on the topic of spiciness, you said it was a little spicier earlier. And
it was.
we spoke a little bit about this when we first met and discussed recording this. You implied that there's somewhat of a tenuous relationship maybe between Marissa, you, Marissa, the persona, and from Boise, the publication, the editorial product. Tell me about this push and pull, this sort of triangle.
Well, at first I was like very, so I had been a freelance writer. I'd worked in PR for like an agency and then for a music festival. And then I was doing freelance writing. So I was always like writing or operating under these different brand voices, right? Like I would sit down to write a project and be like, okay, what's the voice and tone that I'm working with to write this piece? And I remember sitting down and like getting stuff set up with From Boise and being like, what is the voice? Like, what is this brand? I don't know. Like there isn't.
Nobody gave you a brief.
No. And there was also no other examples at the time. Like, I did not know anybody. The local newsletters were, like, not as hot as they are now.
Yeah, which like, we'll get back into that later. But I know, like Landon told me him and Ryan Sneden had been starting to work together. But, like, there was no – the newsletter club – and again, we'll get into this later – didn't exist yet. But there was a few of you starting to make these things, but it wasn't necessarily a network yet as it is.
No. And I didn't know – like, I connected with Ryan like later on, but like when I was like starting it, I did not have, people have so many examples now.
Yeah.
Like I did not have that. And I remember thinking like, I don't really have another choice but to like make this from me. But I really did not want people to like know who I was. I didn't want to be an influencer and I didn't want it to like be about me. You know, I
you
wanted
sign it to, with love.
Yeah.
Marissa, right? Yeah.
Yeah. With love from Boise, Marissa.
Okay. Yeah.
And so, and also like the newsletter comes from Marissa from Boise. Back then, the email that it came from was just my email was marissa@fromboise.com. Now it's withlove@fromboise.
There you go.
But I was just like very, that was actually one of the best decisions that I ever made was to have it come from me because it, I didn't know this, I didn't plan for this, but it like immediately set me apart from other news organizations that were that already existed and were to come. And people feel like they know me like very much. People feel like they know me. And I have been very selective about like what I put out there. But this, like, having it comes from me allows me to just, like, talk. Like, it's so much easier to write because I can just, like, yesterday in my newsletter, it was one that a freelancer had written, and it was about this new, like, sewing studio. And so I just started the intro with, I grew up watching my Nana sew, and, like, these are the, she used to make our Halloween costumes, and people, like, that's just so much more interesting to read. And I got so many replies. It's like, oh my God, I grew up watching my grandma sew too. And she taught me how to mend my jeans. And, like, you know, it like helps you connect with people a lot more. And it also just, like, allowed me to talk about whatever I want. Yeah. And, like, in my own way.
It removes any friction of really thinking through the process when it's just natural. It's coming from you. It's just, well, what would I do? I'm just going to do what I would do instead of thinking too much about what would the audience want for this and that. Like, the audience wants you because this is what you've trained them to want.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, it just, like, built this level of trust also. I would say that, you know, like, your question was about the push and pull. I mean, like, when I was first starting, I didn't have any sponsors. Like, I didn't have any income. Like, it was just
no stakes.
Like, yeah, it was just this, like, fun thing that I was doing. I was like, I can say whatever I want. If you don't like it, unsubscribe, you know, like, and now, obviously, like, you can't just write about anything and then have, like, the city of Boise as your sponsor, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I do, like, retain creative freedom. Like, that is very important to me. But it's, like, my third story. Okay, my birthday is 420. Oh, yeah. And
classic.
Yeah, it is. And I think my, like, third Tuesday newsletter landed on 420, and I was like, I'm totally writing about weed.
Is weed legal in Idaho?
No, very much not legal. However, if you drive an hour, which is what literally everybody does, you can be in Ontario, and all the dispensaries are owned by people who live in Boise. All the parking lots are full of Idaho plates. Like, it's so obvious. So I wrote this whole story about how, like, about that, basically.
Wow.
And it was great. Honestly, it was such a good story. Like, I found all this data about this is back in, 2021. So I'm sure it's even more now. But back then, it was, like, the numbers, I can't remember the exact numbers, but it was, like, every single resident of Malheur County, which is where Ontario is, would have had to be spending, like, $8,000 on weed a year. Malheur County sold more weed than Multnomah County, where Portland is.
Oh, like, Ontario, is this in Oregon?
Yeah, and it's tiny. Like, it's a tiny little town. Like, there's no way. It's so obvious.
Well, did the story bring you subscribers? Did it catch word of mouth?
People loved it.
Yeah.
People sent it everywhere. And I was like, and I actually would still write about that, but I would have to be, like, careful about, you know, who the sponsor was. And
so, first year, you go from 0 to 10,000 subscribers, I understand. Mm-hmm. And this was a mix of paid advertising and word of mouth, such as from that 420 story. Can you approximate the percentage of that 10,000? What percent were paid advertising? What percent were word of mouth? What percent was anything else?
Yeah. Oh my gosh, I don't know off the top of my head, but a lot of it was paid ads. It was, like, literally the only thing I was paying for.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't spend money on anything else. Like, I didn't have anybody working for me. I would just, like, write everything on Google Docs. Like, I didn't have any software or anything like that. It was just all paid ads and good timing, like, targeting people that had just moved here and the right, just, like, figuring out the age demographic and just, like, really asking people to share with other people. And I would also, like, you know, post on Facebook, post in, like, different neighborhood Facebook groups on Nextdoor. Like, I was doing a lot more of the, like, manual outreach.
Hand-to-hand combat is what Landon,
says. Yeah. Yep. That's, I've heard him say that. Yeah. That's what I was doing. I mean, I think that's, like, what you have to do in the early days. And I also, you know, my background is in PR. So I have friends at, like, the news stations, and I was still, you know, when I was starting it, I was still in, like, working in PR. So I would, you know, I would be pitching them for something else and talking to them on the phone. I'm like, hey, by the way, you know, I just started this newsletter. Like, if you're ever looking for a cool lifestyle story. So I did go on the news a couple times.
I saw these segments. Yeah.
Yeah. The first time I went on, I got, like, 500 subscribers that morning. So it was like significant boost there.
Today you're at the most recent public number I could find was 23,000.
Yeah, we're at over 23,000 now. I think this morning is 23,238.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Yeah. In 2025, I think you slowed down paid advertising. I believe I read that on your LinkedIn. So maybe growth slowed overall, but so it was primarily word of mouth in 2025.
Yeah, for sure. And like I would do a little bit. I was doing the thing where I would like turn on ads and then turn off ads. But I was also having like a cash flow crisis.
Well, as we started this conversation with, you were considering stopping it all.
Yeah. Like I literally was just like, what? I was just in survival mode in all parts of my life, to be honest with you. Like I was just like, what is the bare minimum that needs to get done for me to just like keep going? And then that's what I was doing. And I feel like now our growth is in a really good, I feel like now like I've figured it out what levers need to be pulled at what times for growth and for like revenue, to a place where I feel comfortable experimenting, doing some new things. But for the last like few years, it just was like last year I was in survival mode. The year before I was just very bogged down in like other work. Like I basically had three full-time jobs and it was just.
Before you quit in June 2020.
Yeah. And it was just, I probably should have quit before and just gone all in on it. But like, I liked my other job. Like it wasn't like I did, you know, it's not like I was like miserable at a 9-to-5. Like I had another job that was like very meaningful and I liked it. And I also do think I was using that income as like a crutch, you know.
Tell me about the quitting. What, did you have a certain amount of money saved up or you hit a subscriber milestone, revenue milestone? What gave you the confidence, courage, ability to quit?
Well, the baby. I was like, I can't have all these jobs and this baby. But I did. I had like 30K in the bank, which was kind of enough. I don't know. I mean, depends on what you're spending it on, right? So it was like enough in a way, but it's still, I still like, it ran out eventually, you know, like, it still got to the point where I was like, oh shit, I need to hire somebody to like keep this going, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, it was, it really was just like time for me to go all in on it. And I knew that, obviously like I didn't want to keep having all these jobs. Like I just that time in my life was like I had been hustling for a long time, like freelancing since 2018. I went full-time freelancing in 2018.
And you were 3 years into the newsletter at that point.
Yeah. I mean, I was still like freelance writing. I was doing PR. I was like, it was too many things.
You spent 3 hours recording a video. Now you want it to sound better, look better, and reach more people in Spanish, French, and Japanese. Do you re-record everything? Juggle half a dozen tools? Blow the budget on studios and contractors? 11labs is the all-in-one AI voice platform that brings content to life. You can generate, edit, and localize studio-quality audio and video in minutes, all from one place. Expressive character voices, multilingual dubbing, even immersive video content without a studio or a massive budget. It's why companies like Disney, Meta, and Duolingo use it, and why creators use it to scale the content globally without burning more time or money. Best part, you can see how powerful 11labs platform is with 10,000 free monthly credits when you visit 11labs.io. That's 11labs.io. Okay, so you're at a little over 23,000 right now. I know your stated goal for the year is 35,000.
Yep.
And Boise itself, the most recent population numbers I could find is about 240,000 people. The metro area is 845,000. Clearly lots of room to grow.
Yeah.
Do you think that the type of product you have and the type of person who's attracted to it, do you think there's a natural ceiling? Is it like a number you have in mind? Or are you kind of like just like, let's keep going up and we'll see when we get there?
I think I'm always more in the like, let's see what happens camp. But I don't know if there's like an actual ceiling because the population changes literally every year. Like it just gets bigger and bigger and bigger. So obviously that ceiling continues to rise the more people that move here. But I definitely think I can have over 100,000 subscribers.
I know that in 2023, when you did $87,000 in revenue, the vast majority, 77,000, was sponsorships. The rest was some reader donations and a little bit of merch sales. In 2025, was it again 90%+ sponsorships?
Yeah, I did like 90. Here, wait, I have this written down. Let me look at it.
Excellent.
Yeah, it was 93,000 in sponsorships. And the rest was products, reader donations. I've now started to experiment with some like affiliate stuff. So one of them was a paddleboard company that's here, Hydrus Board Tech. Use code from Boise to get 10% off. But really, they are these like amazing.
A lot of lakes in Idaho, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And the most miles of whitewater in the lower 48.
There you go.
And
that's with love from Boise.
Yeah, that's right. They do make these like really amazing paddle boards and surfboards that you can like take on these whitewater rivers is their kind of their like thing. So I've, you know, started to experiment with that. And then some products. I've experimented with some different products this year.
Okay, well, we'll get to the products too, but while we're still in sponsorships, how many different sponsors did you work with last year?
I think we had 56 sponsors. So like quite a few. And that's most of those are like doing a newsletter. They're doing some like the newsletter ad and other things. Like we are rarely just doing one newsletter ad. It's usually like a newsletter ad and social media post or, you know, like a podcast ad or having them on the podcast or something like that. Most of them are some sort of bundle. I have also like I have experimented a lot with like what those packages look like. And I feel like what we have going on right now is working well. And now we're experimenting with what like annual sponsorship packages look like.
That was my next question, is how many of these people stick with you? How many of these 56, 53, how many of them were some of your earliest sponsors, or is it a little bit more of a cycle and people come in and out and then maybe they'll come back in a year? I guess what I'm asking is the longevity of these relationships.
Mm-hmm. Honestly, it's like all over the board, just depending on the organization, especially if they have events. Like if it's an annual event, you know, we're kind of just working with them on like an annual basis leading up to that event. Whereas like if it's an awareness campaign, that has some more flexibility to be ongoing. So it just depends. But like I worked with the city of Boise in multiple different departments, Parks and Rec and Arts and History for years. And I would say that every year that like partnership grows. You know, at first it was like, hey, can you help us promote our email like newsletter? And then it was like, can you promote this event? And then now we are doing a 6-month campaign with Arts and History to like help them get more people into the different cultural sites. So, you know, those have grown over the years. And I like to think that's, I mean, A, because we're doing good work, but it's also because like I like working with them and I try to be very likable to work with also. And then I have a couple of different like wineries that, you know, we'll do like quarterly campaigns with them. So they're not technically signed onto an annual sponsorship, but like every quarter we're doing, you know, sets of ads with them. A lot of the people that we are, a lot of the things that we're advertising for are like events, or we are starting to do more of those awareness campaigns, but a lot of them are events.
Yeah, very direct outcome of we're trying to get this many attendees, and I think that you'll be able to give us 100.
Yeah. And I mean, it really has worked really well. Like we've had multiple people, you know, sell out of their events, and a couple of times we've like actually overwhelmed people with like, they're like, we sold out so fast that now we're like trying to add more. And people are like, what do you mean you don't have tickets? Like I just read this.
Put that on the customer feedback page. Yeah. So are you pricing these typically at a flat rate? Is it more CPM by 1,000 open subscribers?
No, I never do CPM. I don't like that. I like doing flat rate. We definitely will do some like bundles. Like if you buy more, you know, if you sign on for a year, we'll lower the cost per newsletter ad, or, you know, if you do a bundle. Also, like, I like working with a variety of different businesses. They all have different budgets. And so if somebody's like, hey, I have $250 and I really need your help, I'm like, cool. I have a spot open. I'm happy to do that.
You have a sense of responsibility to your community, which includes these businesses.
And it's just like more fun to be like that. Like it's just more fun to be helpful and nice to people and like meet them where they're at. Like that's just, it just feels better at the end of the day.
This is something I remember Michael Kaufman saying when I spoke to him too, about how maybe I forget if it was when I spoke to him or reading it on his social media later, but I remember him saying that, you know, sometimes I meet this person, they have this business, I like the business, I'll run an ad or a little mention on them for free, and maybe it helps them out. And then maybe they come to me and now they want to spend money, you know, and you, you build these relationships in a community like this.
For sure. And I mean, Boise's still like I said, we're growing, but like, it's still a very small, tight knit community. And I mean, some of my best stories have also been things that I heard about. I'm like, they do not have money to pay for anything, but like, that's such a good story. And people, my readers will love it. I want to write about it. So like, let's do it. And then it, yeah, like you said, it brings them business. And then they're like, hey, we have a marketing budget now. Let's do something, or, you know, whatever it is. I don't normally do like the free stuff trade, you know, model, but also like, I do like free stuff sometimes. So, like, yeah, I'm like, well, yeah, I'll take dinner for free or whatever it is, you know. Mm-hmm.
So I know last year you built a proper website you used with a local Boise business, Ampersand Studios. It looks really good. Producer Thank you. Maybe you will put it on the video here, viewer, listener, if you're watching on YouTube or Spotify. Obviously, that's an investment. Did you, was this a trade with them for an advertisement, as we, I mean, you just mentioned, or did you pay for it? It's an investment, clearly, though. Why did you make this decision then?
Yeah. Okay, I'm going to answer both of those. It was a part trade, part pay thing. So there, you can read on the blog that they just recently launched this new offering called it's like the ready to post content subscription.
I was reading, I think it's like 15 it's reels really cool. a month, something like that.
Yeah. It's 15 reels a quarter, and they a shoot once a month, but it's like, I mean, they're the best, and they basically just create social media content that is like literally ready to post. Like everything is ready to go and all you do is upload it. So they were launching that, and you know, she's also just my friend, so we worked something out, which is great, because that would have been too much of an investment. But I really wanted a new website, because it just felt like where I was at. So for the last, until that just launched in December of 2025, up until then, I literally had a landing page.
Yeah.
That's all I've had for the last.
And it was just the list of here's every issue we've sent.
It was just like, this is, subscribe, this is what From Boise is. I think it was literally like one sentence. And then it was just, a list of the newsletters. Like, it was very, it got to the point where it was like limiting me. So then I would use Notion, and like, you know, on Notion, you can make a page like live to the web. Like, that's where our media kit was, and like our case studies, and like, you know, somebody would be like, do you have a case study? And I'm like, yep. And then I would make one on Notion really fast and then like send them the link. Like, I had no, it was just a little too piecemeal. It was getting to that point. And I was also, you know, working with Leslie, who's doing sales. I'm wanting her to go after these like bigger brands and bigger budgets. And I'm like looking at our website, like that doesn't match, you know, like this, we're asking.
It's not giving spend thousands of dollars.
Yes, exactly. And like, it just was. It just felt like it was starting to limit me. And it just didn't feel like, again, like I, when somebody lands on like our social media or our website, like I want them to like feel a certain way. And the landing page was not giving that. But this totally is, you know, like the feeling that you get when you look at our website, like that's what I want you to have. Mm-hmm.
You mentioned some experiments, other products earlier. On November 20th, you launched a discount card, which I've seen this from a couple other local newsletters. And my understanding is you go to 8 or 10 local businesses. You say, hey, let's do an exclusive 10% offer. This is me promoting your business. You will give my subscribers this, or people who buy this, this exclusive offer. And then you sell, I think it's a punch card, and they can bring it to this business and you get 10% off this, 10% off of that. And you charge them for it. You wrote a LinkedIn post about this. You were aiming for 500 sales between November 20th and the end of the year. You sold 136. Total revenue was $2,720. These are the numbers. These are the details. Tell me a little bit more about how this went and what you think about the discount card play.
I made a critical error in not asking my audience what a meaningful discount would be, because I don't think one time 10% discount is enough for some people, which is fine. Like, it's not for everybody, right?
If I'm going to the coffee shop and I'm getting coffee for me and my family, maybe that's like $3 off.
Exactly. So like, I think that the people who bought it are using it more as like a curated list of recommendations, plus you like get a little bit of money off, or they just want to support local businesses and me, which is great.
I actually have
continued to sell some. So now I think last night when I told it, we were at like $2,660 in revenue, and they cost like not very much at all to make. So like, it's definitely still a profit. But I think it should have either been a higher one-time discount or a recurring 10% discount, like all through the year. And I think that would have sold more. But yeah, like I haven't even sold half of them at this point.
Has this taught you about, oh, maybe here's another experiment I was thinking of trying that's not the discount cards, and I'm going to do it in a different way, or I'm going to do this one? What else is sort of cooking for you?
I did this with merch also, that like I have a, I really love like a physical product. Like I like snail mail. I like being able to like, you know, cause you, I could have made that card like digital and it would have been, it would have probably taken more to like figure it out, but it would have been cheaper.
Boring.
Right. Yeah. Boring though. Yes, exactly. And I wanted people to like feel it and like, you know, do something in real life. Like not everything needs to be on your phone. And, however, then I'm like shipping out these cards all night and like addressing everything. And I do like to do that. Like I pre-sold 72 cards and I like hand wrote a thank you. I like hand stamped the card, addressed it, you know, discovered that one of the people was like my neighbor, like literally around the corner. And so like in a way, like I love that aspect of it. But I'm also like, dude, I have a like a 1 year old, like I'm working at night. Like I don't, is this the best use of my time?
Yeah.
And I did the same thing when I did merch. Like then I was like, oh my God, I'm like, I have to like package up and like mail all these shirts and stickers and stuff. And like, it just is like, is this the best use of my time? And the answer to that is usually no. Or it has been no. I don't call that, like, I don't think they're failures, but like, I continuously am learning that like that I don't really, that's like not the best use of my time. It's just really what it comes down to. And the revenue is like not enough for it to, for that to change.
Did this idea come out of the newsletter club?
Yeah. I think it was like before I had even joined the newsletter club. I just wrote Michael and was like, can we talk on the phone? Because I really want to hear about your discount cards. And then, yeah, we just like chatted and then I had heard, so Landon and I have been talking for like several years, just like texting. Like I think we started talking on X and then we've just like texted each other throughout the years, like how's it going, and talked on the phone and stuff. And then I heard him talk about, I'd seen the newsletter club and I heard him talk about it on the podcast and I was like, oh my God, should I join that? Because every time I look at it, the price goes up.
So like I create a spotlight podcast, you mean?
Yeah. Yes. And every time I would look at the newsletter club, I'm like, okay, it was like $100. Now it's like $200. Now I'm like, now it's $500 a year. Like I'm like, which good for Michael. But also I'm like, I need to get in on this if I'm going to like do it. And Landed only had good things to say about it. So then I joined that. And that's actually how I found out about the newest thing I'm doing, which is these dinner clubs. Have you seen people doing this?
I've seen Michael posting about this on LinkedIn, which I understand it's maybe people pay to do them and it's a monthly thing, but there's limited seats. And so you really got to get one. You know, tell me more.
Yep. Yeah. So there's my first one is on the 21st. So it's next week. And so far I've sold 96 seats. I said there was 120 available.
Wow.
Yeah. And so it's through a company. So, I mean, you have to find the people to fill the seats, right?
Yeah.
But like, the company makes it very easy, as like they have your whole landing page kind of set up for you. You set your price. So mine was $16 as like a booking fee.
What are you saying? The company, is that the name of the thing or is this a company?
No, it's called, I can't even remember what it's called, but like dinner, DNNR.io.
Okay.
Yeah. But I think they're called something else. I want to say like Rivers. It's not Riverside because that's what we're on right now, but it's something like that.
I mean, Luma? It's
like River something. I don't know.
Yeah.
Anyways, it's dinner.io, DNNR. And you can set whatever price you want for your seat, but it seems like most people are doing like $15, $16. So that's what I went with. Me as the host gets to keep 70% of that. So I've made like over $1,000 on this dinner. And you they have a quiz that you have people fill out. I changed mine quite a bit just because I can never just like.
Well, is the quiz like with the purpose of should we pick this person or is it a quiz? Is it to
it's
the,
to match people we'll for them? Dinner?
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. It's for like matching people. So I changed mine a little bit, you know, just to match my community better. And so people fill out the quiz and then they get matched for dinner. And you also, I think in larger cities, this probably works better where dinner will source the venues for you. And then you say like, yes, no, yes, no. I had to pretty much input all of mine because it's Boise and I don't know. I don't know why I couldn't find it. But
they don't lower the percentage cut for that extra work, do they?
They don't, no, but that's okay. I put it in there and then they'll do all the matching. The dinner happens. They pretty much handle like all the outreach. So people will get a text the morning of saying, this is where you're going to dinner. And these are the people that you're going with. And they actually just use like an emoji and like a little automated sentence based off of what their quiz was. And then when they get there, they like meet the people. And then during dinner, everybody gets a text that says you're invited to this like after party at whatever bar. And then everyone comes together and meets up at the bar. So nice. It's great because like I don't have to go. I had done meetups in the past and like I felt like I had to be there. It's not that I don't want to be with my readers, but like I don't want every single thing. Yeah. And I just don't want every single thing in my business to hinge on me like doing it and being there, you know? Just like it's just not sustainable for me to do that.
You spent 3 hours recording a video. Now you want it to sound better, look better, and reach more people in Spanish, French, and Japanese. Do you re-record everything? Juggle half a dozen tools? Blow the budget on studios and contractors? 11labs is the all-in-one AI voice platform that brings content to life. You can generate, edit, and localize studio-quality audio and video in minutes, all from one place. Expressive character voices, multilingual dubbing, even immersive video content without a studio or a massive budget. It's why companies like Disney, Meta, and Duolingo use it, and why creators use it to scale their content globally without burning more time or money. Best part, you can see how powerful 11labs platform is with 10,000 free monthly credits when you visit 11labs.io. That's 11labs.io. You recently started posting on LinkedIn around 5 months ago as we record.
Did.
You hadn't posted on there for 5 years. Your first post there got 430 or something like that likes. And it's a photo of you with your baby on your chest. And it's this is who I am and this is what I'm doing. And people loved it. It seems like you might have put it in the newsletter because it got so much more attention than some of your more recent posts. You only have like 500 followers, connections on there. But my guess was that it sounds like this was actually shortly before you joined the newsletter club, but that it was part of that culture of like people in that group encouraging each other to do this thing. Am I right?
Yeah. I mean, honestly, part of it was I just keep seeing men talking about newsletters and it makes it feel like it's a very male dominated industry. Like it's almost giving it like this bro culture thing that tech, you know, industries have. And I think it honestly was like that for a little while. And since joining the newsletter club, I see so many more women starting their newsletters. I don't see them talking about it online. I actually am like constantly asking myself, like, what is my intention with posting online? And I don't really know. Like I know that there's like multiple reasons why I'm doing it. But I also am like, how much is this just for like approval and to like feel better about yourself? And I just don't want to come across like I'm bragging. I want to come across like just that I'm sharing and being open about it, because I think it's easy for people to like look at where I'm at now and be like, well, yeah, but you're like, you know, making six figures and you like have this team. And I'm like, I mean, yeah, but I had like not even, I did
You've been
not
doing this
even
for almost
think,
5 years.
Yeah. And like, I pretty much work every single night still and like weekend. And, you know, it hasn't been this like, I mean, it has been fun, but it's also definitely not been fun sometimes. And, there's also just like a lot of things that I've just like had to figure out that it would have been a lot better if somebody was like, hey, this is what I've done, which is what I get in the newsletter club for sure. Like a lot of people talk about stuff, but for people who are not in the newsletter club, or maybe like even just wondering if they could start their own kind of style of newsletter, like I hope to reach those people.
So you said that it's a lot of men posting about these online businesses. And then you said, I'm constantly trying to gauge what is my intention in doing this. And you didn't then explicitly say part of my intention is to be a woman posting about doing this on the internet and try to then be somebody for other women to look at and see. And this isn't just this tech bro, entrepreneur bro in the arena type of thing, right? But that's, mm-hmm. that seems to be the underlying or a very important part of why you are starting to post online more.
Yeah, I do. Yeah, I think that is true. Like, even though when I like think about that, I'm like, oh God, do I really want to be that person? But like, somebody should. I mean, it's just, I do see more people posting about it now, but like, you know, Ryan and I started our newsletters around the same time. I think we both had very different intentions for why we were doing that. We also just like had very different lives in doing that. Yeah. Like that was what he was doing. This was like my side project. Like I had a lot of, my attention was going a lot of other places. But he like talked about it in a way that made him like the newsletter,
the local newsletter guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like and I think that what, like everything that he's done is great. Amazing. Like I have definitely like looked to him for multiple things. But the way that he did it is just one way of doing it. Mm-hmm. Like, it is not the way, you know? It's one way of doing it. And yeah. I'm doing it a different way. Like, I, right now, I'm not interested in starting, like, another business like he
Unlike
has done.
Unlike him or Michael Kaufman.
Right.
Like, I guess I'm not, Michael's are more still in the, anyways.
But like, that is another, people talk about that a lot. Like
Michael talks about the holding company that he has. And like, Ryan talks a bit about that too. Landon, not so much when I talked to him.
Yeah, Landon, not so much. I think that he's kind of in a similar place that I am. Like, we have young kids. Like, I'm interested in spending time with my family and like working when I want to work and when it works for like my schedule and like doing other stuff that is actually like the things I want to do with my life, like traveling and backpacking and camping. Like, I want to be able to like be offline for a week and it doesn't matter. I'm like not interested at all in starting another business right now, maybe down the road, but like that's just not what I'm doing. And I think that that's what's so great about a local newsletter company is that it can be whatever you need it to be at that point in your life. And I think for women, like a lot of the women that are joining the newsletter club are moms. And I think this is like an amazing avenue for a creative mom, because like it can be as big as you want it to be. Like, it can work with your schedule. I mean, you just schedule your newsletter.
Well, this is very much a through line too. The original creators and the way we talk about them, at least here, were mommy bloggers 25 years ago, right? Like, that's what this comes from. The gender thing is interesting too. It made me think of the disparity in venture capital funding. And I looked up the most recent numbers. This is from Founders Forum Group. This is of the $289 billion invested globally in 2024, 2.3% went to female-only founding teams, 83.6% went to all male founding teams, and 14.1% went to mixed gender founding teams. And I don't know like how many founding teams broadly are men versus women versus mixed gender, et cetera. But yeah, it's words like in the arena or, you know, and we love Michael, but Michael will make his post and it's like this, like it's newsletter publication day. And it's this like generated image of like a knight fighting a dragon. And it's all very masculine. And this digital entrepreneur world, there is like a culture around software, especially around startups. And yeah, it's I was asking Michael 6 or so months ago, I was like, hey, is there anybody in the newsletter club I should speak to? I'm looking for more local media entrepreneurs. I always love talking to you people. And I said specifically, are there any women? I've talked to all these guys. And he said, no, there are not many women. I think he did mention you. You just joined. And he said, I don't really know her that well yet, but she just joined. She could be a good one. So yeah, long way of saying I do think it's cool that you are posting more, and there should be other, there are more ways to create online media businesses than just being in the arena, so to speak.
Yeah. Yeah. And thank you. I constantly have this back and forth of like, how much am I willing to share online? Like, both in the process of like, what does creating these things like mean and in my daily life? Like, I don't really like to have my phone around my kid, but like, if I'm like filming something, then like, it's there, you know?
Yeah.
And just like having to think about it. Like, it's not like at the forefront of my mind throughout my days. Like, I'm not one of those people that's like, I'm gonna like film my whole day. Like, the one time that I made a reel like that, I was like, oh God, I forgot to film this. Like, it was just like a whole thing for me. This is like not my natural tendency. But I do think it's important for other women to see that like, this is a cool business opportunity for you and like career opportunity for you. And it doesn't have to be this like, it doesn't have to be what everybody else is doing. Like, it can just be whatever you want it to be. Like, I know I could have a fully automated newsletter, but like, I don't want that. That doesn't sound fun to me.
Yeah.
And I know I could have like this team of people that I'm managing, but like, I don't want to do that. I don't really like managing people, honestly. Like, that's not something that I like to do. I like to write and I like to like work at coffee shops and talk to people. And so that's what my newsletter allows me to do. And like go take trips and work whenever I want to. And, you know,
well, you're talking about this very human scale sort of online business, whereas any online money making opportunity, let's put it in those terms, any way you can create this digital business, you were just saying, I don't want to automate my whole newsletter. People do that and people find a way to strip mine these opportunities. And with a local newsletter, you're then just strip mining your local community and you're just optimizing for getting the most money out of local businesses, for the most attention from local people. And there's no real sense of responsibility to what you're producing and how you are shaping and influencing that community and how you're using their money and spreading around. So I admire that you are not trying to strip mine your community. And, you know, the people I interview, you, Michael, Landon, Jeff Sharp, Ryan, like, some of these businesses are more optimized than others, but I have not felt that any of the people I've spoken to on this line of work are doing that. But then you do read about these fully AI generated local newsletters. There was that one story last year in particular.
Yeah. I mean, and I just like, I don't really get on X anymore, because every single time I do, I just see these posts that are like, I'm starting a local newsletter and I'm going to make $100,000 in the first year, and this is what I'm going to do. And I'm just like, no, you're not.
Look, I'm part of the problem too, because when we interview these people, you, like, there might be on, this is maybe a little too breaking the fourth wall, but we haven't written the YouTube title yet with the pod, you know, with YouTube, you always want to write the title first, thumbnail before you make the thing. But with the podcast, you know, there's only so much you can predict, but it's very likely that the title for this ends up being how this local media entrepreneur went from zero to $100,000 over 5 years, right? Because that's what then gets attention. And so I think whether it's the Michaels and Ryans who have been posting so prolifically for a while now, or whether it's me interviewing them and then framing it in those terms, that's, I wish we could frame it in other terms. And sometimes we try, and then sometimes that gets less views, and it's really hard.
I'm totally down with that, because making six figures has been a goal of like, I was working at a PR agency and I left in 2018, and I was like, there was two things. One, I wanted to work remote. At the time, my husband now, but he was my boyfriend, he was working on the Wilderness Trail crew in Frank Church Wilderness, one of the largest wilderness areas in the United States. And so he would go backpack out like 10 days at a time. And I'm in Boise, like at my desk, and I'm like, all I'm doing is writing. Like, I could literally write this from the mountains.
Yeah.
And so I wanted to work remote, and they wouldn't let me work remote. And so that was part of it. But the other part of it was, I was looking at it and I was like, with the trajectory of like how many raises I have gotten and where this is going, like, I know I can make more money freelancing and I want to make six figures. It was like what I said. So in 2018, I was like, I'm going to make six figures working for myself. And I've literally been working on reaching that number. Like, that was, it seriously is like, I'm so proud that that happened this
year. From 2018 to 2025.
Yeah. And like, especially, and it's just like such a trip that this year was so shitty in like a lot of ways as far as business goes. Like, it was so hard sometimes. Mm. And so then to end the year, like reaching my goal, I was like, what a whirlwind.
Like, so you posted, just, you have a New Year's post on LinkedIn. You're saying you achieved this last year. And for the new year, for 2026, I'm going to read this in reverse because it gets to more of what we'll talk about here. But okay. You say more hiking plus backpacking, mm-hmm. way less phone time, weekly mm-hmm. posts here, which is LinkedIn, $250,000 revenue, 35,000 subscribers.
Mm-hmm.
So you hit a big goal.
Then I'm like, more than double it.
Well, as one does. So how are you going to hit this revenue and subscriber goal? These revenue and subscriber goals in 2026?
Yeah.
How are you going
to happen? I wanted to keep doing the dinners. Like, it seems like it's going well. And if that can be like $1,000 or $2,000 of revenue every month, like, that's awesome. Especially because I really am interested in, what I'm really interested in that is like the in-person connection. Like, mm-hmm. we are very much missing that in our society. And I'm like really excited about bringing that into the world in general, but especially into my community. So that would be another revenue stream. It'd be cool if we could even do more than one a month, but we'll see how it goes.
Well, maybe you raise the ticket prices too. How much are you charging for tickets right now?
$16.
You got to raise that. There should be 30 at least.
I know. I mean, we'll see. But
getting all the food and drinks?
No, they pay for their dinner.
Okay, that's a little
bit. So like, yeah. I did have a couple people be like, hey, you know, I have dietary restrictions or like whatever, but if you did not dinner, that would be super cool. And so like, that's kind of interesting too, of like, what sort of meetup things could I facilitate that don't, I mean, I like the idea of it being over a meal because it's just like such a natural way to
share with people. Well, this too is bringing up a thread from the other conversations I've had with local media operator with Michael Landon, Jeff, Ryan, of playing this role of community pillar journalist as, or like journalist, entrepreneur, whatever, almost as a politician, right? Where you are this presence in the community and you are a convener of community. But then that means you being at these events and you playing the host. And mm-hmm. I know for Michael, sponsorships have come out of this and these relationships that have really helped build his business. So maybe that's part of it, is you taking that mantle a little mm-hmm. bit, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And like, I mean, Michael has been talking about this in the club, like about getting these dinners sponsored. Like, mm-hmm. and I mean, in a way that's chill, you know, like, this, but it's like an awareness thing for these companies. So like, that's another way to do it.
Yeah.
But I really want to go after some like big annual sponsors. Like I don't think that just because you have a local newsletter, you have to have all local sponsors. I think it should be majority local sponsors. Cause like, obviously that's what is resonating with people. But like somebody said to me, Justin Moore, he's like a sponsorship coach. He has Creator Wizard. He said to me, because I was like, I just feel like there's a limit on, like, Boise is not that big of a city. The companies here only have so much money, right? Yeah. And like, especially to spend on local marketing.
Why don't you work with Merrill Shoes, right? Something like that.
Well, he was like, so you live in Boise. Do you only use local products? And I was like, I mean, no. And he was like, why? I mean, that's how everybody in Boise is. Like, there's, you could totally have, like, what are things that people are using that aren't local, but that want a local audience, right? Which I was like, duh. But I don't know. You kind of just like get
it's one
tunnel
of these rules
vision.
You impose on yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm like, it has to be local. So while I'm like, I definitely want to keep it as local as possible, but also, what else can I go after? So I was just meeting with Leslie yesterday and we were brainstorming what that looks like. And I really want an airline partnership.
Like, that would be huge.
I really want an airline partnership because people travel all the time. People are coming and going from Boise all the time. Mm-hmm. Our airport is expanding. Like, we're constantly getting new flights. Alaska Airlines sponsor from Boise. Like, that's such a good partnership. Or Delta.
We're going to end it right there. If you're listening, Alaska, Delta, if you're listening, if you're listening and you're not with Alaska or Delta, let's knock on wood for Marissa here. 2026.
So, I mean, I just feel like I definitely want to play with some like annual presenting sponsorships, different category sponsorships. And just kind of like explore what that looks like and really focus on like recurring monthly revenue. Cause that is, if I was going to give advice to somebody starting out, like try to lock in some sort of recurring monthly revenue ASAP. It makes your whole life so much easier. And obviously it has to be like the right fit, but yeah. So I think that's how we're going to double it.
There we go. We'll end it right there. But for listeners who maybe live in Boise or the surrounding area, is it from Boise.com?
Yep. From Boise.com.
And then everybody should go follow you on LinkedIn and watch as you post all year. Let's see if you hit. Yep.
I'm on. I also did do that on Instagram as well. Okay, it's Marissa from Boise is my new personal brand channels.
Wow.
Yeah. So we'll see how that goes. I was like, I'm going to post every day in January. And I think I've posted like 3 times, but
yeah,
I'm going to just try to go for once a week.
You got it. Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you for coming on. This was so fun.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, of course. Listener, we'll see you next week.
Hey there. If you enjoyed that, then the next episode you should listen to is this episode with Michael Kaufman. He's the founder of the Newsletter Club, which was referenced a few times in this episode with Marissa. And of all the local newsletter episodes we've put out, it's the most popular. So that's a good place to start. Go watch that one next.